Welcome to our Sports Cage. And thank you so much for checking out the Sportsline podcast here on CHCH on our podcast page. I'm Bubba O'Neill. Hey, Hamilton, Halton, and Niagara teams, athletes, broadcasters, and executives are always our focus. But once a week, we open the conversation to all that's going on in the sports world with the Sportsline Square Off. With the likes of yesterday's guest Damian Cox and Stephen Brunt and Jeff Blair setting the stage in Toronto, this individual has become Hamilton's media triple threat. Since the summer of 1998, Scott Radley has informed, educated, and entertained his readers at The Spectator. For a decade, he has expanded his talent and reach on radio with The Scott Radley Show on the legendary AM 900 CHML. In addition, he's been on the cutting edge talking more than sports on Cable 14, Sun TV, TSN, and of course, right here on CHCH, our regular here, Scott Radley. Always great to have you, partner.
Thank you. I'm a little concerned. Did you say sports? Cave or sports cage?
Our cave.
Okay, I thought you said cage, and I'm like, okay, is this like MMA now? Do we have to fight our way out of this? Can't leave until one taps.
Well, it's a square off right now, and there may be things that we disagree on, and this may happen.
Can I disagree on something?
Yes.
This is a world-class sporting media operation.
Yes.
You could have anybody. Why is Tim Boland's hockey sweater on the wall of anybody? Tim Boland? Not Dave Andrechuk.
Yeah.
Not anybody else.
Really. You raise a great point. With all due respect,
it's like
I guess
going to a buffet and loading up on French fries.
He was the star of the CHCH
was he?
Sportsliners, I think it was the name of the name. Was
he
the name
was
of the
star?
Hockey team. Boland apparently is pretty good on skates. Believe it or not.
All right.
Right? And Lisa Hefner used to be pretty good too, apparently.
They must play games at 3 in the morning for Boland to be the best player. He's the only one really awake.
It was all charity stuff, guy. All charity stuff. Hey, so much going on in the sports world right now. I didn't even know where to start. I think we should just get right. Everyone knows who you are. We don't need any introduction. Let's get right into the Sportsline Square Off because opinions need to be discussed right now.
All right.
Okay, let's get into it. Folks, hey, all of a sudden there's a column that's being written by the likes of Steve Simmons, and some people say that he is rather provocative, we'll say. Hey, so here's it's called The Invisible Leaf. That was the cover of the Toronto Sun today. When the Buds need him the most, Mitch Marner is pulling his usual playoff disappearing act. Is that cover fair or foul, Scott?
Based on the first two games of this season, of this series, it's been pretty fair. Mitch Marner he's been pretty invisible. I mean, he's not done anything. And the thing that you need with Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews was amazing in the second game, and he's found some chemistry with Bertuzzi and Domi. You need Marner to give you a second line that is going to scare some opponents. So, because if you're going to try and shut down Austin Matthews, you got to find something else, at least have to find something else that they're going to do to create problems. That's Mitch Marner. And I would suggest that maybe Steve was a little bit early on this, only because it's two games in. On the other hand, how much is Mitch Marner being paid? And I know you can't completely judge everything everybody does on their salary, but if you're being paid, what, almost $11 million a year, I think that there are some pretty substantial, and he's going to be a free agent coming up and is going to want more than that. There are some pretty substantial expectations on this guy. So, you know, I remember years ago, and you may remember this as well, this was back in the Wendell Clark playoff days, there was a column written very similar about Wendell Clark. It might have been by Rosie DiMano, if I recall correctly. It's going way back. And about how he had just been not anything in the playoffs. And then I do remember that he came out the next game and for the next few games and was absolutely unbelievable. Just tore the series apart. We'll see if Mitch Marner can do that. He's never going to do what Wendell Clark did physically, but we'll see if maybe this is fire. Maybe this is motivation to say, I got to do something because I'm being called out.
Well, he's there for his offensive acumen.
He's a great defensive forward.
And he is a great defensive forward there, but I think it's interesting now. I mean, is he not happy right now because he's not playing with the number 34 right now? Because all of a sudden, right, it looks like Domi and 34 got something going on within the last quarter of the season, and you're trying to develop that second line with the captain in Tavares, but I don't know if Marner really works well there. He likes playing.
Don't forget, when John Tavares came to the Leafs, he played with Marner, and he had his best years in years when he came. So Marner and Tavares have worked together.
He loves Mitchie. Like that, Mitchie, it's a Mitchie and Matthews. Isn't that what he likes?
You know what he likes, clearly? $10.9 million. He likes being paid as well. And so, you know what? You go out there, and if they ask you to play on the fourth line, if they ask you to go play defense, it's the playoffs. You've been handsomely paid, and you presumably, now the only thing you've got left because you've had paychecks is you want to win. Because right now, let's be honest, there is not a guy on this Leafs team among the big group, the Riley, the Marner, the Tavares, the Matthews, those guys, there's not a guy who's got a reputation right now and a legacy of being a winner. Their legacy, if they were all to retire today, they would all go out as guys who won one playoff series. That's embarrassing for guys with this kind of talent. So you would think, and maybe he does, I'm not putting myself in Mitch Marner's head, but you would think that the thing you would do is, I've been paid, they've compensated me fairly, I am now going to do whatever they ask, and I'm going to do it really well, because the one thing I want more than anything is to win. And if they believe that me being on a second line, running a second line or a third line or defense, I will do it if it is going to help our team, period. I don't care if I hate it. I'm going to find a way to love it because it's going to help our team win.
I think it is one goal in his last 10 playoff games. Mm. It's very not Mitch Marner-like from what we see in the regular season. And we do hear, we've heard it from all the analysts on Sportsnet and TSN, that the playoffs, it's a different game.
It is.
Right? And why can't he adjust? He's got to adjust.
He's going to have to figure something out. And here's the other thing that I think people forget is, you know, we hear that Mitch Marner is this small guy. Mitch Marner is not 5'6".
No.
Mitch Marner is like close to 6 feet tall. He's slender. He's not a huge guy, and his game is not being super physical. But Mitch Marner is not a guy who, if you run into him, he's made of crystal and is going to shatter. And so I think that's a bit of a misnomer. Right? But that's not his game. We all know that's not his game. And so you have to find a way. Look, Austin Matthews, for the first few playoff seasons the Leafs had with him there, was nothing special. Last year against Tampa, he was very good. He figured it out.
Really good.
And certainly in game one of this series, he was pretty good. Game two, he was unbelievable. He was outstanding. He has found a way to up his game now. And last year, Morgan Riley found a way to up his game. He was exceptional in the playoffs last year. Mitch Marner is going to have to figure something out. And if he doesn't, the thing that will play against him is, and I'm not here to give the Leafs advice, but I
go ahead.
I will give advice to two players. If you're John Tavares, do not come out after the next loss and say, we've learned some lessons. People have heard enough about we've learned some lessons. And if you're Mitch Marner, don't get cranky and start being all petulant with the media.
Oh, you guys. You guys.
Don't do that. That's not, you are on the ice. As I've said a bunch of times, you are being paid really well. You are a star on this team. You're one of the best wingers in all of hockey. This is your time to figure out how to do this. And it's only two games in. Mitch Marner tonight and going forward could be a star in these playoffs. But he's going to have to be, or else that is going to dog him for a while, because other guys have seemed to figure out how to step up their game in these big moments.
This conversation is going on prior to Game 3 of this Bruins and Maple Leafs series. And at this point, speaking of disappearing act, William Nylander has been a complete no-show. Mm. We don't know why. The Leafs have said nothing. The NHL have said nothing. I'm going to ask you the question. In normal circumstances, we even get a lower body or an upper body. We've got nothing. So do the public have the right to know what's up with William Nylander?
So the answer is no, because that's just the way it's always been, that the public doesn't. And I believe it was Pat Quinn. I believe it was Hamilton's Pat Quinn that was the author of the upper body, lower body thing. A lot of great things Pat Quinn did in hockey. That one, not one of his finest moments. But here's the part about this that I don't understand now. The NHL has firmly latched on to sports gambling. They have firmly jumped into the pool of sports gambling. We know in the NFL that they have to be specific, because you now have bettors who are wagering on games, and you need to know what's going on to play
days prior.
I think the day is probably coming when the NHL and NHL teams will not get away with this, that they will have to say what's wrong. And even if it's, you know, even if it is just upper body day to day or something, they're going to have to give something. Because if you're going to be tied to gambling, if you're going to decide that this is an integral part of building your fan base, you can't say, wager on our games, but we're going to keep stuff from you that would allow you to wager properly on our games. Or just take wagering out, which is never going to happen because it's a big moneymaker now.
Do you know what's wrong with them?
No, and he's skating around and he's taking line rushes in practice and in pregame skates, and then he can't play. All I know is this. There are guys, who was it last year, who played the playoffs with a broken sternum? I think it was Tkachuk, wasn't it? Matthew Tkachuk?
Tkachuk, or even the Stone. Spleen issues.
Yeah, okay. He has got the most remarkably magical spleen in the world. It's lacerated, but magically heals itself. He is just in time for the playoffs, like last year. He's a magic man. But I don't know what's wrong, but it's weird that if you can skate around and do all these things and look fine in practice, that you can't be on. If you're injured, I don't know, should you not be going and getting treatment? Should you not be not risking this kind of thing? And I would even understand, like, you see guys who are injured and recovering from injuries skating by themselves, you know, to keep their legs going afterwards. You got the open ice and you're just racing around. But if you're that injured, what happens if you run into one of your players in a drill or slip and fall in a full rush and you crash into the boards? And like, there's something very weird about this. I just don't – I have no clue. No one does.
And the crazy thing is we saw the likes of Domi sit out the last two games of the regular season because he had a little bit of an ouchie. Nylander played in those final two games of the regular season. So what happened in the three days?
Something.
Like –
something.
I'm beginning to think it's not anything health related. I don't know.
You're going down the discipline line of things? I can't.
I'm going to go there. I don't know what it is, because I would think to myself, if he was hurt, he's played every game up to this point in his career. He says he doesn't miss games. Whether you say he's a no-show on the ice or not is a completely different thing. But he gets out there. And he's an important part of the team. Scored 40 goals this season. It's the playoffs. I think Willie would be out there if even he was banged up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't. I can't believe the discipline theory or whatever that's going on for two reasons. One, if that was the case, remember, Sheldon Keefe is coaching for his job right now. If the Leafs don't do well in these playoffs, there's a reasonable chance, probably a good chance, that he's gone after this one. So if it's a discipline thing, maybe he got sat for the first game, but then you get him back in. The second thing is, though, when has Sheldon Keefe ever disciplined guys? Guys do stuff, stupid stuff on the ice all the time, and they maybe miss a shift, if that. I can't even remember now the story. He benched Marner for a shift or two shifts earlier, and then apologize to Mitch Marner for the benching, basically. This is not a team that disciplines guys, let alone for two or three playoff games when your jobs are on the line. So something's up going on injury-wise. Who knows what?
Speaking of the head coach, Mr. Sheldon Keefe, I mean, we've heard it all season long, and I don't know if it is the pressure of his job. He's called his team's play immature. He's called out his goaltender, I mean, before even the player even went on waivers. And most recently, in game one, he called out Domi for his play and then corrected himself a couple of days later that I love his intensity. Is this approach fair or foul?
I think he is trying desperately to find the right button to press. And when you've had a team that has had as little success in the playoffs, as much success in the regular season, and then as little success in the playoffs, I think he is probably trying to figure out what is that magic button to press that will make this team relax and just play the way they do more often than not in the regular season. So, you know what? There's always going to be criticism of coaches and second guessing of coaches. On this one, I think you wait until the series, or a few, hopefully, for the Leafs series are over, and you see if what he did worked. If they go out now to Boston in this series, people are all going to go back and say, why did you, you know, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. But maybe they win. Maybe they beat Boston for the first time since 1742. Back when they were using
Come on, 1959.
Frozen dinosaur dung as a puck. And maybe they finally beat Boston. And then everyone says, you know what? What he did worked. And so, you know, these are the kind of things. I think some of these coaching things, you can only gauge them retroactively, you know, in the end, looking back and say, did it work or did it not work? And that, and all the, you can tell the beauty of playoffs is you don't have to wait long to find out if they worked or not. And there's no question about whether it worked. You win, you lose. There it is.
The crazy thing to me is that we keep hearing about the athletes are different today and that you've got to talk to them differently. And we remember a situation where last year he called out, and I'm talking about Keith, called out Matthews and Marner and after a game, and then apparently had to apologize to the locker room, and then that became public, and you know, Marner and Matthews talked about it to the media the next day, that we've hashed things out, we've talked as a team. I don't know. Like, I mean, I know for the better part of my life, we had guys like Scott Bowman or even Mike Babcock or guys that have had some success in the National Hockey League, Quenneville, that when they're upset with their team, they're upset with their individuals or their team. And if they get called out in the media or called out in the dressing room, your job is to respond, not complain. And then even the media start to take the side of the players, saying, oh, that's just not an interesting coaching technique, that's just not going to work.
I know that the times are different, and I know that the team back then was awful, but imagine how some of the guys today would respond if John Brophy was coaching right now.
Geez.
Where everybody was fair game and you were getting skewered all the time and just his face beat red and you mentioned some of the other guys. It's such a different world. The psychological games that coaches would have played to try and get their team going. It is a very, very different world. And the irony of it, Bubba, is that once again, not to go back and harp too much on the money, but the guys back in the day were playing for wages that the average person who was an executive at the time, and I don't mean like today's executives, like an executive would have made. NHL players once upon a time lived in the same neighborhoods basically as the average people in their city. Now, Mitch Marner, there's not a lot of guys who are making $11 million a year. You would think when that is your pay, really, the coach could come in and say almost anything to you, and you go, no, okay, all right, he gave it to me, and I'm just going to live with it because look at my paycheck. That's what I'm being paid to accept and to perform. But that's not how it works, and I think guys are more sensitive today, regardless of what they're being paid, and coaches have to respond differently.
After a game one win in their series with the Nashville Predators, Vancouver Canucks goaltender Thatcher Demko goes down with an undisclosed injury. And in game two, well, Casey DeSmith did not get the job done, and the Canucks lose. And again, the Canucks are a team that many people believe are a serious Stanley Cup contender. So I ask you this. If Thatcher Demko is a no-go and there is belief that he will not be available for this series, are the Canucks' playoff chances over?
No, because they are a good team. We just talked about Mitch Marner. Pettersson is going to have to be a lot better. Here's the irony of this. We're talking about this before Game 3 of the Leafs series, after Game 2 of the Canucks series, after Game 2 of the Jets series, before Game 2 of the Oilers series. You've got Skinner in net for Edmonton, who's okay. You've now got DeSmith, not Demko, in net for Vancouver. You've got Hellebuck, who probably is going to win the MVP award, but has looked like a complete sieve so far for Winnipeg in net for Winnipeg. Suddenly, Ilya Samsonov might be the best goalie for a Canadian team in the playoffs, and who saw that coming? I mean, based on his Game 2 performance. I don't know. I teams have overcome big stuff before. Your star goalie, it's a lot to ask. The one thing Vancouver should have going for it is that I don't know that Nashville is a team that should terrify you. You know, it would be a lot more frightening if you were playing Dallas or Colorado or Winnipeg or Edmonton in the first round. Nashville's not a bad team by any stretch, but I'm not sure they're the team that should make you feel absolute terror. You are, I think Vancouver is a considerably better team than Nashville. But again, it's a rare team in the modern NHL that doesn't have star goaltending that wins the cup final. You don't have to have the best goalie, but you have to have a goalie who gets hot at the right time. Look at Florida last year with Bobrovsky. Just got crazy hot and took them to the Stanley Cup final. And we'll see if DeSmith can do that.
That's a lot of pressure, I think, there, because I don't even know who the third goaltender is there, if Demko. Now, Demko did have a knee injury.
It's the Zamboni driver, David Ayers.
Oh, God. Yeah, he's good for one game, maybe. But, like, you know, Demko did miss 14 games with a knee injury, and now they're saying it's got nothing to do. These injuries are not related, which, you know, whether that is true or not, we just don't know, because, as we talked about earlier, no one's telling the truth about injuries. But I just thought Demko, he's an above-average goaltender. That's why he's a candidate for the Vezina, along with Hellebuck. And that's a great point that you just brought up about Samsonov right now maybe being the best goaltender in Canada right now, or at least giving their team the best chance to get to the second round.
And that's only based on game two. By the end of game two, we could change our story entirely.
We want Joe Wall.
Who knows what happens? Game to game.
It really is game to game, especially in the postseason, where each game means so much. When you have to forget, if you lose, you got to forget exactly what happened in the prior game. The funny thing is, too, we do talk a lot about Leafs Nation and the media and the fans in Toronto and how the reaction is. Can you imagine if Vancouver gets knocked out in the first round, the reaction in Vancouver? And then I know you're not in love with the people out in Vancouver and their fan base.
So Vancouver fans tend to have a bit of a reputation for being a little, well, look, we go back to, what was it, 2011, when they lost in the cup final and then burned the city down. That was not a good look for their fan base. Vancouver fans have a reputation, let's just put it that way. Whether it's fairly earned or not, it is what it is. And it's probably, if they lose in the first round, you can at least, if you're a Vancouver fan, point to the fact that Demko got hurt, which was a huge, I mean, look, if the Leafs were to lose Austin Matthews to an injury, they would be pointing to that if they lost in the first round and saying, look, we ran into a situation where our very best player was gone. So it's a built-in excuse for everybody out there now, including the team, if they want to take it. I'm not sure they're going to lose this series. I'm not, because I still think Vancouver is a way better team than Nashville and should still be able to win and rally around your goalie. Teams have done this before. They've lost key guys, and they rally and they make stuff happen. I mean, the Edmonton Oilers, the year they went to the Stanley Cup final, the last time they went to the Stanley Cup final, I believe, when they played Carolina. Remember, they had Rolison, who got hurt, and, you know, they didn't end up winning, but for a while, Ty Conklin was their backup goalie, former Hamilton Bulldog. They rallied around him, and, you know, you can do it. You can find something to really use as your focal point. Maybe this is it for Vancouver. Maybe this is the thing they rally around and they say, we needed something else to push us over the top. Maybe this is your thing. You can use it to your advantage. It doesn't have to be a detriment.
You're right, because in that Oilers team, there were guys like, remember this name, Fernando Pisani? Like, these guys went...
Steve Staios.
Staios. These guys went wild in that postseason run, and you're right. And Rolison was a considerably more important part of their team than some of those names.
But Rolison really goes to what I just said, though. You don't need the best goalie.
No.
You need a goalie who gets really hot at the right time, and Rolison did that year.
Now, after being fired in 2009, the Buffalo Sabres have rehired Lindy Ruff. Now, he had a long stay in the Buffalo area. Is he the answer of bringing this team back, who have missed the playoffs for an NHL record 13 consecutive seasons?
You're the Sabres fan. You start with this one.
I'm scared. I mean, there's that saying out there that, you know, once your girlfriend dumps you or you dump your girlfriend, that really you can't go back. Like, you just can't go back.
If you love someone, set them free.
And if they come back, maybe, you know, and here he is. Lindy Ruff is back in Buffalo. And he's always a guy that's been really associated with the Buffalo area. There's no doubt about that. The runs that that team took with the likes of Briere and Miller and those years were just special back-to-back years of going to the Final Four, and they're reveled very much like in the same, like the Leafs Stanley Cup Final Four appearances with those teams. The only thing that makes me enthused is that when he was fired with the Sabres, there was a belief that he had lost touch with learning how to coach younger players. And then went to Dallas and rediscovered himself. They had some really good teams with Lindy Ruff as the head coach there. Again, some final eight appearances and some teams that did very, very well in the regular season. And then he went over to the Devils last year. And I had no idea what the Devils were doing in the playoffs. Got beat in the first round. I think went seven games. So maybe he's turned his abilities around. Maybe he's got a softer touch now. Maybe he knows how to, as we talk about, treat these new athletes compared to... Because remember, he's a guy that played many years in the National Hockey League, so he's old school mentality. So perhaps if... It's been a long time. Like, I mean, come on, 13 years without playoffs in Buffalo?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that if I'm saying 13 years and we have to end that, I don't know if I would have got here. Ted Nolan wasn't available. If you're going to bring old guys back.
Well, they did. They brought him back. You're right. I forgot about when Pegula, remember, early in his year, they brought him back one more time, and it lasted all of a season.
Didn't Craig Ramsey coach there for a while? I mean, like, it's just, there are a lot of other guys out there who are good coaches right now who are waiting for a new opportunity, and maybe they turned him down. Like, we don't know who said no to the Sabres, but Craig Berube, there's a guy who's going to be under great demand this offseason. I bet he's going to get a job. You mentioned a name a few minutes ago. I don't know if a team is going to take a chance on this guy because of what got him out of hockey.
Oh, Quenlin.
Joel Quenville. And, you know, like, I think that it's not that long ago, is what, 3 years since Quenville's been out? I don't know when people say you've served your time in purgatory sufficiently. I'm not smart enough to answer that question. I don't know. But somebody, at some point, is going to hire Joel Quenville.
Yeah.
They just will. And they'll say, we'll take our lumps, and we'll say he's done his time and he's paid his price. And if the NHL lets him back in, Lindy Ruff seems to me to be the guy that you rehire. Look, he's not a terrible coach. But I don't know that there's any excitement around this. It's like they did it because he already had his pass card and we didn't have to send him to IT to get it. So he already knows how to get in the building. So let's just get him in. I can't imagine Sabres fans are gurgling with excitement at Lindy Ruff coming back. That's the thing. And I think this is a franchise that really could use some excitement at the possibilities. Now, they will be very excited if Lindy Ruff finds it and turns this team into a winner. So I grant you that one. But I don't know. It seems like such a weird choice to come back with this one.
It does. It reeks of desperation. Be fair here, right? Like, it really does. A guy that...
Familiarity that is...
Yes. And that's the reason there. It's like, okay, well, this is a guy that we know, that they know us as a management crew. I know Kevin Adams wasn't there as a general manager, but, I mean, he's being probably instructed in some ways, too, as all GMs in sports are. And the fan base are looking for something to latch on to, a guy. I don't think he left the Buffalo area. I think he still lives in the Buffalo general vicinity, even though he had the other coaching stops as well too. So I don't know. Again, just bringing back and I think there's going to be expectations, right? Like, when he was fired in Jersey, like, I haven't heard this in North American pro sports, really. Fire Lindy. Like, that's what crowds in Newark were singing there, you know, days before he got fired. So
yeah, no, I just don't get. Of all the choices you could have had, this one just seems like a weird one, because there were other options out there that have had more success recently. But, you know, look, we'll see. Again, we were just talking about Sheldon Keefe, and you have to give it some time to see. Maybe Lindy Ruff has figured something out now. and is going to bring something back to the Sabres. And, you know, and I don't even know at this point, like, for the Sabres, what's success? I would argue that success would simply be making the playoffs next year.
Has to be.
That would be the...
Has to be.
That would be... So is Lindy Ruff a good enough coach to get them to the playoffs? You would think, yeah, especially in a division where, yeah, the Leafs are still there and they're going to be pretty good probably next year, we would think. Don't know how good. The Panthers are there and they're going to be pretty good. The Lightning are still a good team, but they continue to get further away from their championship years. The Bruins would be a similar story, I would think. The Canadiens haven't really made much of a move. Ottawa hasn't made much of a move. Detroit made a step. But, like, my point is the door is open for the Sabres with the right guy leading them. The door is open to make it into the playoffs. Whether he does or not, we'll see.
It's baseball now. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. The Blue Jays lose 3-2 last night. But how did they lose? Vladimir Guerrero Jr. playing first base drops a ball with two outs in the fifth inning of a 2-0 lead for Toronto. The Royals, as I said, would go on to win 3-2 based on three unearned runs due to that drop ball. You mix in the fact that Vladdy was a complete no-show at the plate. He took full responsibility at the end of the game and said, that one's on me. But are you tired of hearing the, that's on me, Scott?
So, what's Vladdy hitting this year?
No, he's...
217?
Yeah.
219?
Yeah,
something like that. How many home runs?
I think three.
And now, all three, as I recall, have been, like, gigantic home runs. So we get the replays 100 times because he crushes it when he hits it. But he's got three home runs. And I don't blame a guy for dropping a ball. Guys drop the ball. The best players in the world will drop the odd throw or drop a pop-up. That's not the issue. I just don't see any sign that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is improving. This is a guy who had that great year 3 years ago. Yep. And has been on truly a downward direction since then. And what, publicly anyway, visibly, what are we seeing from this franchise that is showing that they are serious with him about changing his swing or changing his attitude? But he's the guy who brings out the water to dump on the players. He's the clown, you know, who does all the stuff. And I don't mean like the class clown. He's the guy who's...
Yep.
I don't know that if you're a guy who's not playing well and hasn't really played all that well for a couple of years, that's your role. I think that this organization, I really believe this, this organization probably needs to be a little firmer with him. And when you have a game like yesterday, we just talked about, you know, again, Sheldon Keefe, and about do the Leafs ever discipline anyone? When have the Blue Jays disciplined Vladimir Guerrero for anything? And I truly believe that a part of this is because he's coming up on his free agency year in, what, a year and a half, they're
yep.
terrified of making the guy not want to sign here. So he gets to do whatever seemingly he wants to do. I really believe it's time for them to take a bit of a firmer stance with him. And, you know, every offseason we see these pictures come out on Instagram of, oh, this year he's really taking it seriously. He's down in the Dominican, he's sweating, and he's... And then he comes back and it's the same. He's hitting ground ball after ground ball, and he's dumping the water on people, but he's not approaching the potential that this guy has. And at some point, someone has to start pulling him aside and being a little firmer with him.
But who's that guy?
I don't know.
That guy I don't know. There's no veteran presence other than Kiermaier, and he's batting 200.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. What are they going to do?
I don't know who does that. I don't know if that's Schneider. I don't know if Schneider has the backing of upper management to do something like that. What if you were to say to the guy, you know what? You're going to sit for the next three days. You think? I mean, would Schneider be backed by Ross Atkins and by Shapiro if he were to do that?
He might gain respect with the public.
Well, there's a lot of room for respect because this team, and not just Schneider, but, you know, lots of people, including you and I, have talked about what happened in the playoffs last year and some of their decisions that are based seemingly with little regard for human involvement. It's all analytics. I don't know what the analytics... what are the analytics saying about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s numbers?
0-5 last night.
He can't be good. They can't be good. So if you won't play a guy like what's his name, who hit the home run in like the second game of the year, and then you sat him the next day.
Schneider.
The other Schneider. If you won't play him because the analytics say, well, it's not favorable to us, and then you don't play Varsho after he hits a grand slam because the analytics aren't favorable to us.
I don't understand.
What are the analytics that are showing that continuing to play Guerrero right now at 217 batting average are favorable to you? Why not? Like, it just doesn't make sense. I really believe they need to start taking a firmer hand with this guy and saying, you're here to play baseball. You're expected to be a star. And what do you do if free agency comes and he's still this? You know the potential is there for this guy. He's got oodles of potential. We saw that 3 years ago. But so you don't want him to walk out the door and go to the Red Sox or go to the Dodgers or whoever else and become this guy that you know he can be. But are you going to pay him $30 million to be what he is now? Or $40 million? How do you do that?
I don't know what the, I mean, they're stuck because you've got him and Bichette that you're going to have to stroke real good because they're going to get paid at the same time, these guys are about to get paid. And already the Blue Jays lost their arbitration case with them, you know, over, what is it, $800,000. And he got the $19 million or $18 million. I don't know what you're going to do because I'm scared. We always knew he wasn't going to be a great defensive first baseman. But the 0-for-5 last night, which I keep seeing a lot of 0-for-4s, this team right now is second in the American League in hitting into double plays. He's a big part of that. Not making strong contact other than the 3 home runs. And he's supposed to be your leader. Scary stuff for the Blue Jays. And you're lucky that guys like Varsho are playing crazy good right now.
Yeah. Imagine if Varsho wasn't hitting, 6 home runs in his last 10 games going into today. I don't know what you do with him exactly, and we're not in the clubhouse. All I can say is whatever it is they are doing with him is not working right now. It hasn't worked for 2 years. So whatever it is you're doing, it's time to start trying something different and whether that's just making him demanding that he try a different batting swing, launch angle, all that stuff, or whether it's that you need to sit down for a few games, or whether it's you're just going to DH, or whether it's, I don't know, but it's not working. This guy that's supposed to be a star in this league is hitting just over 200 and looking like anything but a star.
Let's stick with the Blue Jays here, and I think this is going to be a fun one. After rejecting the Blue Jays offseason offer, who knows what it was, Shohei Ohtani and the LA Dodgers will appear in Toronto for a 3-game set. This is be interesting for me because I know you, even this Bolin guy, he'll be in the seats. And I know what he's going to do, but will you be booing Shohei Ohtani?
I don't know. I'll say this about I don't know what I'll be doing. I mean,
he rejected you.
We're going to one of the games. Here's the thing. I don't believe, and I've said this from the start. I think I was on here early on when you started doing this. We were talking about Shohei Ohtani. I don't believe that he ever was coming to Toronto. I don't believe that he was ever seriously contemplating coming to Toronto. Now, if the Jays had said, tell you what, we'll up the offer to $1 billion. Okay, maybe, you know, you say, okay, I can't not. But I don't believe he ever was really coming here. Toronto served the purpose that Hamilton always has served for NHL teams. That we are the fulcrum that you use to put on the pressure. That if you won't give us a new arena, we're going to Hamilton. And then they never do because whatever gives in. I think it was always the Dodgers and that Toronto was just being used as the patsy to, you know, to squeeze more money out of the Dodgers, and they did, and good for them. They got $700 million. I mean, good for them.
But he rejected us.
Well, did he really?
We were crushed.
Did he really?
Don't you remember that day when we found out it wasn't true?
Yeah, Robert Herjavec's plane was. I don't know that. Here's the thing: has Shohei Ohtani ever really talked about Toronto? Like, do we even know that he was the one talking about ever going to Toronto, or was it just his agent?
Ross Atkins said so.
Ross Atkins said so, but that's, yeah. But again, you need the general manager of the Jays to buy in and believe this if you're going to squeeze the Dodgers for more, right? So, but did Ohtani, and I don't know if he was ever really part of this, or if he was ever in the, or he was always in the background and it was just his agent working the angle. I don't know. Is Ohtani a bad guy here? I don't know. I honestly, I don't really blame him. You know, $700 million to play in LA at Dodger Stadium on a team that seems to be run a whole lot better than the Jays are a lot of the time. That gives you a chance to win championships. I don't know.
But then we found out about the finances of it, the fact that they're giving him peanuts every year.
By his choice.
Yes, by his choice, right? Rodgers could have afforded to backlog his pay for a decade and say, hey, we'll give you $680 million in a decade. Would have been nice.
Oh, look, it would have been fantastic if he was here. I think if he was here, we just finished talking about Guerrero and Bichette. I would bet that it's almost a guarantee they're gone instead of being signed as free agents if Ohtani comes here, because now Ohtani is your team. It's going to be Shohei Ohtani and 8 slap-hitting Dominican shortstops who come up here to play for the minimum, because that's all you can afford at that point. I just don't know whether Ohtani was really the guy masterminding this, and whether then he becomes the villain, or whether it's his agent that we should be pointing to, who's maybe in a private box that should be the fans should be booing. But he will get booed. I have no doubt that he is going to get booed, because why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? You're there and you're mad that you're paying $30 for a 2-foot-long hot dog and $18 for a beer. You got to take it out on someone.
Basketball now. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, our Hamilton hero, right in there, nominated for NBA MVP. Beautiful. What a beautiful season. Averaging 30.1 points per game. Top seed, leads the OKC Thunder to the top seed in the West, 57 wins. But in reality, his competition is two-time MVP Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets, and who could be looking at a three-peat, and I don't know if that's ever been done. What do you think? Does he have a chance?
Probably not this year. I shouldn't say that. I mean, he's a finalist, but I'd be very surprised if he did. But I think what this does is, if he performs anywhere close to what he did this year again, he's now fully in the radar. He's now absolutely in the eyes of the voters. And, you know, this is a terrible example, so forgive me for this one, because, you know, and it's the first ever ice dancing metaphor that I'll use on this show. But, you know, back in the day, Bubba, when the Salt Lake City, the judging scandal with ice dancing and stuff, and part
was that the French judge?
I think so, or yeah. The Russian judge, whichever it was. Mm-hmm. But the idea always was, nobody in figure skating or ice dancing at that time, maybe it's changed, ever came out of nowhere to win the gold. You had to work your way up and eventually, you know, look good for a long time, and then you earned your turn. And then the judges would know, because they had graded scorecards, that, okay, we know that this person is good now, so now we can, now they're okay to win. And it, you worked your way into the consciousness of the judges, so they were looking for you now as a potential winner. Maybe the better way to say it. I think that's what Shai has done here, is that he has now made himself one of those guys that the voters are going to be looking at down the road. He may have surprised a lot of people by getting this far in the award process this year. No one, I don't think anyone, did you expect him to be one of the three finalists for this year?
Well, I thought based on last year, I mean, he finished fifth last year, and I thought that, you know what, I will kind of disagree with you, because I think I kind of did, because I thought last year he was fifth, and I kept saying to everyone I could tell this to, he's getting better.
Yes.
He's getting better and better. And then what really put it over the top for me, that I said, this guy is going to have an outstanding year, was his performance. And I know it's different. I know it's FIBA basketball. But what he did at the World Cup and leading Canada to that bronze medal was, to me, and again, a win against the United States in the end, I'm like, watch out for this guy. To me, it was the other pieces around him. And the fact that he's made those other pieces around him, that the young squad that he's 25, yep. and he's the old man on the team.
So, yeah, last year was terrific. He did finish fifth, as you say. But there's lots of guys that have had a great year.
Yep.
And then go away and then fall back. So the fact that he's now done it twice, I stick by what I'm saying. I really believe that he has now made himself one of these guys that is a name brand. The NBA, more than any team sport, is a celebrity star-driven league where you know who these stars are. I really believe that what he's done is put himself in a position where if he's this good next year again, he probably wins it. He's put in his time. He's waited his turn. And now he's the guy next year. He could win this year, but I think next year might be his year if he's this great again.
Let me throw you this. In the years where Michael Jordan played basketball, was there a year, really, especially after he won his first MVP, was there a year after he won his first MVP that he wasn't the MVP of the league?
You mean as officially voted or?
No. I mean, in your mind, was he not the best player in basketball every year that he played? Pretty much. After he won his first?
Maybe after he won his first, although, you know, there were guys who had great years.
And that's where I'm saying. There was a guy by the name of Charles Barkley that had a great year. But you can't tell me that Charles Barkley deserved an MVP over Michael Jordan. I think there's something to be said about voter fatigue.
Oh, for sure there is.
And I think this is, they're like, you know what? He did the 30.1 per game. Is he the triple-double threat that Jokic is every game? No. But look what he did with that team. 57 wins. Hey. Now, this is what I could have never believed, that OKC would have 57 wins and number one seed in what I think is a much more difficult and scrappy Western Conference.
Yeah, we thought that when OKC traded Durant and all those guys and Russell Westbrook once upon a time, they were going to be destined for wandering in the wasteland forever.
Forever.
Them for getting back. Look, you don't have to convince me of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I mean, this is a guy who, if he wins this, I think, I was trying to think of this the other day. I was talking with someone, and because we didn't want to miss something, I don't think that there is a comparable honor that a Hamilton athlete has ever won. I can't think that maybe someone out there can think of something, but I can't think of something that would be as significant an individual award. Now, you know, we're talking about, so winning a PGA Tour event like Mackenzie Hughes has done twice. Is that the same? It's a different kind of thing, and that's an individual sport. But in a team sport, I don't think any Hamilton person, male or female, has ever done anything that would be the equivalent to this.
I think it's bigger than winning a Stanley Cup.
Well, on an individual basis. So, like, Dave Andrechuk won a Stanley Cup. Now, when Dave Andrechuk won that Stanley Cup, he was the captain of the Lightning. There's a statue for him outside Amalie Arena. But by that point, he was a third, fourth line guy. Is it different from winning a Stanley Cup? It's different in that Andrechuk's award then was really as the leader, the emotional leader and the guy who bought in of a team game. If Shai was to win this, you are the best individual in a team.
You're the best individual, and I think you start to say, is he the best Canadian baller of all time?
Okay.
He's getting closer to Nash every day.
He would be one of the two. He would be one of the two, I would think. I don't know who else you're going to put other than Steve Nash. Who else would be in that mix?
Murray, maybe?
But if we're just talking best of all time, Murray's an amazing player. We just saw the basket he hit the other day. That amazing player. But you can't put him in the category of best of all time when you're talking about Nash and a guy who's been now
Fair.
A finalist twice and could win this thing. I mean, Murray might be three. But I don't know. There's no way that he's not one of the top two right now. And he's, what, 25?
25.
Plenty of time for him to make his case that eventually he'll be number one. Plenty of time. We'll see.
I'll tell you that there's it's a hot topic. I'll tell you because we're already talking. I think it's interesting. I know TSN did this big thing, expose and feature on him, and then broke it down with a panel about SGA being the greatest Canadian baller of all time, and the fact that he may not have to win two MVPs. That maybe if he wins a NBA, leads his team to an NBA title, that might trump the two NBA MVPs that Nash won.
Or does well in the Olympics, which is something Nash was never able to really do. He was great on an Olympic team once, yes. But they never. So, as I say, there's plenty of time and runway and opportunity for Shea to make that case. And I would be surprised if he doesn't make the case for two reasons. One, the time that he has. And two, I don't think anybody would argue that Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is a better athlete than Steve Nash was. Physically, his body and the, yeah. And I'm not talking like they're both amazing basketball players, but Shea is a guy who he is so, when he runs on the court, when he jumps, it looks effortless. And he is a guy that just with the work that he's put in, and I'm not saying he's not worked to get there. He's worked unbelievably hard to get there, but he's a guy who's got the build, the frame, the youth, the team, the opportunity, the time with Canada basketball now in the Olympics, like everything is there for him to make his case ultimately that he is the best ever from this country.
Stay tuned, folks. I tell you, Scott, this has been a lot of fun. And every time we get to sit down and talk about all the crazy things that are going on in sports, I love it because, you know, you can always bring your interesting takes. And I think it's been fun. Thanks for joining us.
I have a bigger name shirt next time, right? Bigger name sweater. That bowling thing can be retired.
Do we have like a Ancaster Angels baseball shirt that says Radley on it? Maybe?
Yeah, we probably, you know, this is a good week for me to be in because I was noticing you had Barry Forth in earlier from Copetown Woods this week, who my son worked for at Copetown Woods. And then you had Damian Cox in. Who my son is friends with his son and played baseball with him.
Okay.
So there's a connection. My son should have been in here today rather than me. He's going. But.
Well, he's pretty up on the media and the sports stuff, isn't he?
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. But yeah, no, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. And this is the first time I didn't have to follow Simone.
That's right. That both times you followed Simone.
Yeah, yeah. So you know what? Simone, look for Simone on Sportsline coming up later this week.
Apparently he's done. Over. Simone's. No more. Folks, that's your Sportsline podcast for the day. Hey, we love talking sports from a local, provincial, and national perspective. If you do know of an athlete, team, or event to promote, the Sportsline podcast want you. Contact us on many of CHCH's social media platforms, and we'll get you on this cozy couch. And while you're at it, please comment, because we appreciate your feedback. For the wonderful minds and hands that make this podcast possible, thank you so much for joining us and putting up with my coughing as well, too. I got to do something about that, and we'll see you tomorrow, folks.